And he's talking about us. This is the Taylor Report, CIAT, just like the man said, 89.5 FM. Phil Conlon is here.
Yes, good afternoon, Phil.
We hope to be speaking soon to Ishmael Reed, one of America's most important men of letters. And he's written many great books, poems, and he's a fighting man. He takes, and a big game hunter, I'm going to call him. And later in the show, we're going to be talking to Zafar Bengash. We spoke to Zafar last week. As you know, the Trump administration came very close to war in the days following our last interview with Zafar. And we want to get, since Zafar is very knowledgeable about movements and activity in the region, we need his perspective. There's several questions we want to ask him. And in the matter of Ishmael Reed, we expect to be talking about this Netflix production called When They See Us, the story of the Central Park Five, which we've discussed on this show. And, of course, this Mr. Reed's new play, which is taking care of Alexander Hamilton, as he richly deserves. I think we're joined by the man himself, Ishmael Reed. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I am, Phil. How are you?
Good. It's great to talk to you. You're really tearing up the pea patch, as usual.
It's easy.
Yeah. Yeah, you just tell the truth and it starts to rain, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, but tell our listeners again, this is Ishmael Reed, and he is one of America's most important men of letters. He has several great books that everybody knows, Mumbo Jumbo. My personal favorite is Reckless Eyeballing. Reckless Eyeballing seems to me is very pertinent to this recent revisiting of the horrible racist frame-up of the so-called Central Park Five. And Ishmael Reed has dealt with this. And as a matter of fact, we talked on this program with you. Now, Netflix has made a film called When They See Us.
Yes.
And there was one by Ken Burns, a documentary.
Yes.
And so I wonder, I guess there's also the third part of this is the fallout or the way everybody's talking about it now. And I'm a little unimpressed with the Washington Post, New York Times, et cetera, the way they talk or fail to mention their own role. But anyway, I'd like to know what you think of this whole phenomenon.
Well, I thought there was something wrong with the case. In 1994, I had a run-in with PBS NewsHour. Mm-hmm. And they had, that's before this new evidence came forth. And they had a hour special on the Central Park, incident. Mm-hmm. And they compared it to the murders of the Khmer Rouge and the atrocities committed by the Nazis. And at the same time... During that time, there was something called the Voodoo Murders in Mexico. Mm-hmm. And they lumped that all together. And Roger Rosenblatt did this pompous narration where he designated the Central Park as sort of like hell, and that what happened here was a case of pure evil. Mm. And so I wrote a piece about how that was really over the top, whether the young men were guilty or not, that this was really... Mm-hmm. An overreach comparing all this with these atrocities that mm-hmm. happened abroad. Mm-hmm. So the producer got in contact with my publisher, Addison Wesley at the time, and instructed them to have me apologize. So I had saved the tape of the program, and I sent it to my editor, Don Fair, and he sided with me. Mm-hmm. Well, the publisher got cold feet, and I think that led to Don Fair being fired because he stood up for, my position. But I don't know I've run into Roger Rosenblatt since then. I don't know whether he's going to apologize, but there are a lot of people who need to apologize, including Naomi Wolf and a number of other people.
Yeah, I'm very glad that was something which came, I know in previous interviews, that everybody, of course, now is saying, well, Trump was the bad guy. Look at that. He bought a full-page ad in four papers, and so we can all agree, okay, Trump was he was really a bad apple. But like you mentioned, Mr. Rosenblatt, and then I recall you told us there was some sort of demonstration or meeting on the steps of City Hall in New York.
You know, I saved a photograph that I put on Facebook about, I don't know, a couple of years ago of, you know, what I call a sort of like bourgeois feminist, mm-hmm. not to be confused with the grassroots feminists who began the movement. Mm-hmm. There's a magazine called Tycoon, mm-hmm. and a writer who's a socialist named Harriet Fraud has accused Gloria Steinem and the others of co-opting what began as an integrated movement that emphasized diversity. Mm-hmm. And she's saying that, you know, it was co-opted. But anyway, I was talking about that type of feminist. Mm-hmm. They were in front of City Hall demanding that this these young men be lynched. Mm-hmm. And so feminism, these kinds of feminists really played a role, and their role has been minimized. And as a matter of fact, a Village Voice reporter, after the new evidence came out, called them and asked would they change their minds, including the New York chapter of NOW, National Organization for Women, and she didn't find any takers. People did not return her calls.
Didn't return the call.
Right.
I suppose that's probably to this day, right?
You know, yeah, so it's not
they're like the prosecutors, right? The prosecutors say, okay, we didn't get them, but they were bad boys.
Oh, yeah. They'll get you. You know, they'll find some way to get you.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'll get one of these suburban juries, what mm-hmm. I call colonial juries, because they always challenge the seating of black people. As a matter of fact, there was a Supreme Court decision that came down a couple of days ago about how prosecutors across the country have this trick of excluding, you know, black jurors from cases. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, it was Kavanaugh who sided with the who sided against the prosecutors. That's amazing.
No one saw that coming.
Nobody saw that coming. No.
We're speaking to Ishmael Reed, poet and older enfant terrible, I think. At the time, you know, there was a classic situation. There was a mother's committee. The mothers of these young men, 14 to 16 years old, 13 to 16, who formed to try to get some justice for their children, and they got trampled.
Yeah, well, that was a, you know, Linda Fairstein and both the prosecutor and the district attorney were feminists. And they were insisting that these, even though they knew that the police had coerced these kids into confession, they were out to get, you know, somebody had to pay for this rape. And I think black feminists were saying that if it were a black woman involved, there wouldn't have been this outcry and the call for the death penalty of these kids.
Mm-hmm. Now, and of course, another figure in this was someone that you've taken up the matter of, and brilliantly, in my opinion, there was a film called Precious, and it was based on a novel by
Sapphire. Yeah,
well,
her poem.
Where is her position today on this?
Well, I haven't heard from her. I think my op-ed about Precious in the New York Times just about buried the movie. You don't see it anymore. And she was incensed about that. But she made up a lot of stories. First of all, saying, for example, that Precious was a real person. And when pressed, they found that, you know, she had to admit that it was fictional. Mm-hmm. But she came to prominence mm-hmm. because of a poem she wrote, which placed the young men at the crime scene and had them uttering all kinds of, you know, vile language mm-hmm. at the victim.
Mm-hmm.
This got her a $500,000 contract from Random House for that book and the Precious book,
mm-hmm.
and it brought her notoriety because Dan Quayle, who was vice president at the time, used it to embarrass the National Endowment for the Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts backed the poem, so that brought her into a position where a movie, or the adaptation of her book that became the movie Precious, the worst film ever made about black life,
mm-hmm.
although blacks had very little to do with the producing as usual,
mm-hmm.
or the directing of the movie, or mm-hmm. the packaging of the movie, Mm-hmm. And so she was made famous by that poem,
she even named them, right? She
put herself.
She imagined herself in the mind of one of those young men.
Yes, absolutely.
I wonder if you've seen. In preparing for this, I watched a 30-minute discussion with a couple of these men now, and my gosh, they're terrific people, and people really do. You got to understand. I mean, they portrayed in as animals, as evil, and here they are, articulate, courageous people.
Yeah, well, that's a theme going all the way back to the Pilgrims, that we are animals, that we're bestial, that in my play, the research for my play, I quoted George Washington as saying that there was no difference between a Native American and a deer or a wolf. So this dehumanization not only occurs in that case. You notice that the president even refers to the Mexican children as animals, so that's something. And even, you know, no matter how much education you get, you know, they were calling President Obama and Michelle Obama animals.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that persists in American history. And I go into that in my new book of essays that Robin's going to publish.
Uh-huh.
Why no Confederate statues in Mexico?
Listen, when is that book coming out?
It should be out very soon. It should be out in September or earlier.
We all understand you're a great writer and poet, but you got a gift for titles, I got to say.
Well,
Reckless Eyeballing has got to be brilliant.
Yeah, you know, I sort of like Find the Hidden Corners of American History, which is easy, and which, are not the same as the official history. Uh-huh. And so it occurred to me that some of the Confederate generals earn what I call their massacre credentials in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before they began a war that cost 600,000 Americans their lives, they were in the massacre business against Native Americans and Mexicans.
Mm-hmm.
So Robert E. Lee and
Jefferson Davis.
The American invasion of Mexico. It shouldn't be called the Mexican-American War. The reason Mexico got into trouble was because they tried to resist the Americans bringing their slaves into Texas.
Well, that'll get you in trouble, for sure.
Yeah, and, as a matter of fact, I said, if they had tolerated slavery, they would still have California Southwest. But not many people know that history.
Yeah.
And so that's the title I took. And what stands out is that Robert E. Lee faced resistance from some cadets aged 13 and 19, and they resisted and refused to surrender and were slaughtered. And so Los Ninos, they call them. I don't know Spanish, but mm-hmm. And they have their statues in Mexico dedicated to them. There should be statues dedicated to them up here. And also there was something called the St. Patrick's Battalion
mm-hmm.
of Irish-American or Irish immigrants who come here. And the atrocities committed by these Confederates, and there were Union generals in it also, involved in it, were so terrible. And, you know, these were fellow Catholics, these Mexicans,
mm-hmm.
that they defected and fought on the side of Mexico, and they were hanged. 16 Irish people were hanged in by the American army.
Right.
And so there were, I think, there are more casualties in the so-called Mexican-American War than in World War I.
Wow.
And so it occurred to me, I said, if some of the Southerners knew about this back history, they wouldn't be building these statues, these guys. Of course, I was amused to learn that these statues only cost about $12,000.
Wow. But, you know, you're really illustrating something so important. I once saw an interview with Gore Vidal, and he said, he was talking to somebody, and he said, he got a question about the Mexican-American War, and he said, you know something? I missed that altogether. That's, mm-hmm. He said, I tried to tell the history of the country in my novels, and I missed that altogether.
That's because, this is what I ran into with Hamilton. Is that a lot of the enthusiasm for Hamilton stems from the fact that black and brown lives don't matter. So it doesn't matter that Hamilton owned slaves or that he married into a family, the Schuyler family, that was terrible in their treatment of slaves. Mm-hmm. But in the musical, they try to make him into some sort of like Obama progressive.
I find that so amazing.
I mean, the guy left the sales receipts of slaves on his expense account. Yeah. It's so simple. That's so easy, you know. Yeah. But I said, you know, it's amazing that, not so. New York was a perfect place for this play to begin because black lives never mattered in New York. There were always atrocities and massacres against black people and Native Americans in New York City, up until Eric Garner being strangled on television, or, you know, right before our eyes. And what did the NYPD do? They persecuted the filmmakers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's why I say that, you know, first of all, they had a Puerto Rican playwright put his name on it, and then they had, a black cast portraying slave masters and slavers.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, apropos of that, people should just Google, you told me, and that's a good tip, just Google Ishmael Reed and then put in news, and it was really full of stormy material, and I think it's wonderful the way you have really, you know, struck a blow, and you have everybody talking. In the New York Times, I read all those letters, and that's why I'm kind of almost punch drunk. But I'm reading along, and I find you in the middle of the letter section chatting with these people.
Right.
And,
but
there's so much anger and confusion, although I would say a tremendous amount of praise for your, first of all, taking on Hamilton. I can remember we talked on this show, but also now you've turned it into a play where you are haunting Mr. Miranda, or
well, you know, the
history is haunting.
Responses have changed in the New York Times. I mean, first, you know, we did a reading, which cost me $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
So we're a big spender. We go against this $100 million gargantuan thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they send somebody on their payroll the first night. I mean, they are very vulnerable. They're very nervous because the historians who, the historians were three women, and their research is very valuable to me, including Michelle DuRoss, especially from SUNY Albany. But the women were the ones who began this controversy, actually, and I sort of tagged along, but they weren't getting any notice, and so the play did it. The play brought to the surface some of the discontent among historians.
Yeah. Well, you know, it seems so important. I noticed that my impression of this play is I read the text. I didn't, of course, I can't afford to get in, but by the way, it's coming to Toronto, and it's almost a year away, and they're starting to beat the drums and play bugles and announce that we get to see Hamilton. So maybe we should stage the haunting play here
well,
as well.
I informed, Robin that if he knew anybody in Montreal who wanted to do it, you know, if we didn't do a performance, we could do a reading at least. With local
I think
actors.
That'd be great. That would be that would be a wonderful idea. And people
because
are offended that playwrights talk about each other. And my understanding is that most of the great playwrights in history wrote plays back and forth, straightening each other out as well they should. I want to point out something, though, that I heard. I watched Mr. Miranda, and people said, well, he's just an artist, you know, leave him alone. He's just creating something, you know. But he was arguing to keep Hamilton on the $10 bill when the Obama administration was about to announce that Harriet Tubman was going to be on the 10.
And frankly, he
succeeded. Hamilton is apparently secure on the 10, right?
Well, we have a great actress named Rosalind who's playing Harriet Tubman. And she addressed that issue and also talks about her history. These are all, it could be called the education of Lin-Manuel Miranda, because he read that one book, and he even got that book wrong, because at least Cherno does say that Hamilton and his wife, Eliza Hamilton, might have owned household slaves.
Mm-hmm.
But he has a caveat. He said, well, if they did that, they might have done it reluctantly. So I have somebody mocking those lines in the play. But I don't think Miranda is... I think Miranda's probably great at show tunes, but I don't think that he had the history nail. And when he went to Puerto Rico, he ran into trouble.
Uh-huh.
The Puerto Rican students picketed him.
What was that about?
They accused him of, praising an oppressor, Hamilton,
mm-hmm.
and they said he ought to do a play about Harriet Tubman.
Now we're talking.
Yeah, that was in the New York Times.
Isn't that something? If the people get a voice,
absolutely.
As opposed to these, and another issue, people ought to know that Ishmael Reed and has been tampering with American currency for a while. It was you who challenged Arthur Schlesinger, who wrote the great admiring book of Andrew Jackson, and left out the Trail of Tears.
Well, he left out a lot. Andrew Jackson was like America's Hitler, as far as I'm concerned. Now, they get all upset when you say that. Well, how could that be? How could we be like the Germans? I mean, there's a lot of research to show that the Germans drive a lot of their ideas, especially sterilization.
Yeah, they got it backwards.
Sterilization. Mm-hmm. From the Americans, the idea of getting rid of people who they consider feeble-minded and all those things.
Mm-hmm.
So they get really upset when you talk about the evil of their past. So, mm-hmm. Andrew Jackson just about exterminated the Creek Nation. There was a battle where a witness said the butchery went on for hours, and then he disrupted or he eliminated a fortress that... Native Americans, a communal fortress that Native Americans and blacks had set up in Florida called the Negro Fort. He said, these people are free, these black people are free, and the other blacks are going to get ideas. And so he went into Spanish territory and destroyed that fortress and killed hundreds of people
mm-hmm.
without even the permission of the president, which sounds like this guy who sees, this current president who sees Andrew Jackson as his predecessor. He also tried to shut down the free press.
Yeah.
So Andrew Jackson, Schlesinger explained that he was 27 at the time. That was his explanation.
but it's very, to be pedantic, Mike, it did cause some changes. They couldn't hide anymore because you took them on, yourself and others. But I remember you, the most vocal I heard about, going after...
I made his obituary. I'm not too pleased with it because out of context, I said that he was a follower of David Duke.
Mm-hmm.
And they printed that in the Times in his obituary. And what I meant was that David Duke received his degree in history, would you know?
Well, but there isn't, you pointed out, there are now historians coming forward, and they've, principally it's women historians have been the ones straightening, really doing that, the basic groundwork that you speak of. We haven't got rid of the old boys' club. Mr. Chernow was invited to the White House,
press
room. And I thought, what is that about?
I include that in my play. I include that in the play. I kept revising it, so I included some of the remarks he made mm-hmm. before the press club. He said, first he said that, slavery was a cruel institution, but he spent the first 20 minutes praising slave masters. So I said that they tried to avoid having a comedian, but they really got one. So Chernow appears in my play, and he gets a lot of laugh lines there.
Uh-huh. I notice as far as...
I have a character playing. I have an actor playing Chernow.
I see that the actor wrote a nice letter to the Times saying, don't call me a pencil-necked something.
Oh, yeah.
He said, that's how I look. That's not acting. You're talking about me.
A critic of Indian ancestry said that he noticed that the bad criticism, all the people who gave the play a hard time came from Brooklyn. And I think the critic of the Times, I think she came to the United States in the 1980s, and so she might not have the feel for American history that I have. My great-great-grandmother was a slave, so I have a different reading of American history than she
has. A certain memory, that's kind of hard to, you can keep erasing, but it ain't going to go away, right?
Oh, yeah. And the Asian magazine shows a young woman who's an undergraduate at Harvard. I mean, they would never do that with a white playwright. I would just be frank, they would never assign, young undergraduate from Harvard to review the play of some of those white playwrights that they honor.
Mm-hmm.
But she made some mistakes, and I could tell exactly where she's coming from in her review.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of embarrassing her with a letter to the editor, I just let it go. I'm going to send her a copy of my book, Conjugating Hindi.
Yeah.
She's of Indian ancestry, so I probably know more about Hindi than she does. I think she's trying to assimilate. I don't want to continue with that, but you know how it's all rigged here. But we got good reviews too. We got excellent reviews in Current Affairs, the Paris Review, the New Yorker, some other publications. But this is all based on a reading that didn't cost us very much money.
Yeah, by the way, that you in a way have got yourself a living play, because every time these guys say something, you can just change the text, right?
Well, can I quote you on that? Yeah, we made a home box office. I don't know if whether you saw it. I could send it to you. But home box office, there was a big criticism. The main criticism was I had, as a matter of fact, Annette Gordon Reed, who attended the first night of the reading. There were four readings held in January. We had packed houses every night. And she asked, had I seen the play? So that became like the line that, well, he hasn't seen the play.
Uh-huh.
And Annette Gordon Reed turns out is on the payroll. She's like a consultant to something called some kind of exhibit or museum or something that they built in honor of Hamilton in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
So she's on the payroll. But anyway, finally...
That's kind of an old trick.
Absolutely. And another woman is named Joanne Freeman, so she did the soundtrack. She's from Yale.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the idea was to awe everybody, having two historians from Yale and Harvard to back this thing.
Yeah.
But even, to be fair, Annette Gordon Reed did say that, you know, he wasn't an abolitionist. And so they changed the line to, he was opposed to slavery. And I said, that's like, in view of the fact that he sold slaves and purchased slaves to others, it's like saying Colgate is against toothpaste and Henry Ford's against automobiles. So, I mean, that's their little, you know, weak line they've come back with.
Yeah. Well, and they've tried to sell this. They say, well, you see, he's like your classic immigrant or refugee. He's Horatio Alger with a kind of an ethnic mix. His party was for the Alien and Sedition Act.
Yeah, and he also wanted a monarchy. He was for an elected monarchy. When, you know, one monarch dies, then you elect another one. But he was right at home with that crowd, so-called founding fathers. Both Jefferson and Hamilton had Scottish ancestry, so they might have had relatives. So when he came there, he had like a leg up in comparison. There are lines in the musical about how he became a new man in New York, and he had all these opportunities in New York. And I have some of the characters in my play talking about how New York treated black people and Indians.
Mm-hmm.
It was such a great town. You know, the lynchings and hangings and, you know, all these suppression of, you know, for example, there was a Black-Irish alliance and hundreds of people were executed and sent in exile. So New York hasn't been such a happy place for black people. So when he came to New York, he was, you know, among his peers. As a matter of fact, I have a book here called The Secret Founding of America, which says that they were all Freemasons.
Mm-hmm.
So, there was camaraderie among those people.
By the way, that is, I have no doubt about that. I mean, I've read some of the biographies that joining the Freemasons, that was part of what you did.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's how you be. It's like a club, right? You join the club.
Yep.
And it does have an impact. I know that America's gone through several. There was once a guy ran for president against Freemasonry, and a lot of people supported that because, you know, these kind of wealthy people with clubs, you kind of keep an eye on them, you know.
Yeah.
We're speaking to Ishmael Reed, and You just closed the play, ended a run at the New Yorker. I like the element, by the way, you mentioned in the letter, you said that I guess you called him the producer. Is Noble is his name?
No, Ron Neal is the director.
Ah, but he provided banana pudding.
Banana pudding. Well,
that stands out when you're reading.
This is kind of like some of the luck that we ran into along the way. Somebody from the Times came down to write about his habit of beating the audience's food, banana pudding. There was a reading of the play the same night. So we got sort of like a review. We got like three quarters of a page as fast because the reviewer reviewed the play as well.
You put him on the spot. Now everybody's going to go there expecting banana pudding.
Yeah, well, we're coming back in October with another run. We had such a outpouring or such a, demand for the play that we are going to extend the run into October for a month and maybe beyond that.
Good. We're going to work to get the play here.
I think if you can't...
We could organize a reading on the Taylor Report.
Well, if you can't do the play, we could send our director up there from New York, Rome, and he could organize a reading among some of the local actors up there.
Now we're talking. All right.
And that would not cost very much.
Consider us the volunteers.
That'd be great.
I have to ask
I'll come up there. You guys do a reading up there.
We got about
13 people.
Much admired in Toronto and Canada. We'd love to have you. We will appoint ourselves to go to work on that. I have to ask you, lastly, I know you follow basketball, so I have to say the Raptors and the Golden State Warriors had a real go around. Did you have
Broke my heart.
Pardon me?
I wrote a poem called The Battle of Toronto. And how we're going up there, and some of our people on crutches. congratulations! Yeah, that was a great game. I love that series.
Well, by the way, you wrote a novel, Flight to Canada, which and that is a great read. And speaking of reads, everybody should read that to learn something about the history here as well.
Have any thoughts? Canada comes up a lot in my play, because I do mention Harry Tubman. And Harry Tubman and a lot of those people settle in St. Catharines.
Uh-huh. That's right.
And they had a metaphor about Queen Victoria. When you arrived in Canada, you were in the arms of Queen Victoria.
Uh-huh.
So while the British are bad guys in Hamilton, we have some things to say about the British attitude toward slaves, so-called slaves in the United States. If they joined the British forces, they could be emancipated.
Yeah.
And that was one of the grievances that Hamilton had against the British was that they were stealing Negroes from their owners.
Yeah.
And he listed Negroes along with horses and cows.
Yeah. And they wanted them back. You remember that?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that was negotiated, but they didn't get them back. That's part of our literature here, too. We have a couple of very good novels about
Canada,
it.
Canada plays a great role in, I talk about how Harriet Tubman went to Canada, and from Canada, from St. Catharines, and from
Brown had a meeting here.
Absolutely. And she returned to the South 19 times and liberated 300 people. Yeah. That's why she should be on.
Well, she should have replaced Hamilton. They say she's going to replace Jackson, but if given your track record, I think you may be putting George Washington in your sights.
Well, everybody lays off him. We have George Washington. We bring George Washington, Phil. We bring George Washington down from Mount Rushmore.
Huh.
And according to everything I read or research I've done, he loved to party, loved to dance. Mm-hmm. So we have a great black actor playing George Washington, Robert Porter. And he dances and he talks about getting Indians drunk and watching them fight each other for recreation. And, he's just like he has Venus, his black slave. It's not a rumor, but I think it's pretty much well substantiated that he had a child by a slave named Venus.
Mm-hmm.
And there's even a photo of the child. His name was Ford West.
Uh-huh.
And Ford West did not live among the slaves. He had his own house, and he went hunting and fishing with George Washington. So he's treated in a special manner.
Well,
that's all in my play.
Yeah.
Ishmael Reed's American History.
Yeah. You created a mountain of wonderful work. We would just pleased as could be to be talking to you. Thank you very, very much, Ishmael Reed. And we're going to work on bringing you up, okay?
That'd be great. That'd be great.
In time for Hamilton.
That would be wonderful.
All right.
That would be terrific.
Well, thanks again.
Okay, thanks a lot, Bill.
Okay, okay. Bye-bye. This is the Taylor Report, and that was full of stuff, right, Phil?
That was amazing. That was an amazing interview.
He's a big game hunter. He got Jackson and Hamilton.
Yeah. One interview.
Hamilton, yeah. So he tries to make the game, Hamilton doesn't like Jefferson. Jefferson's worse than Hamilton. Jefferson is. And it's written in from a right-wing point of view. Yeah. But they leave out Mr. Washington, who Hamilton got everything in terms of power from being tight with Washington. He was like his special pal.
There's one quibble. Gore Vidal went after Washington.
Yes.
And boy, did he do a good job on it.
Right. Well, he did a good job on it. But there has been no confrontation in the sense of a play, a movie.
Nobody picked up and made a film out of Gore
Vidal. By the way, you don't have to destroy. Just bring him down to who he was and get the picture straight. He was part of the a Federalist gang.
Right.
And I mentioned Alien Sedition Act. Washington did not oppose that. And that was grabbing foreigners and excluding them from American life, driving people out of the country, Alien and Sedition Act. And sedition was free speech. You couldn't say anything off color about the president of the United States. That's what they said. They made that a law. That was Adams, John Adams. But everybody forgets that's Alexander Hamilton and Washington. They're all Federalists. Get it straight, you know. So this is the Taylor Report at CIUT. It's 89.5 FM. We have some music by this fellow,
KJ Fordham from Crowbar.
From Crowbar, coming up.